Accession number 17528, Reel 2.
Mr. Maxwini, Reel 2. Just before we take it any further, I think we may have missed a bit of your experience in Dunkirk itself once you arrived at La Panne.
Yes, because we couldn't get off at all, for reasons I've already given, I decided to take my lot all the way down to Dunkirk itself, down to the mole. It's quite a long trip, I mean, it's 3 miles, and we got into a line on the mole, and then the mole was bombed and bombed and bombed, and I decided there was no point in staying there. We'd be much more likely to lose our lives down there than we were on the beach. So I marched them all back again. So, in fact, we had 3 days and nights on the beach being attacked, bombed and shelled, with nothing to eat. So that is the bit, I think, that probably I've missed out.
Now, coming back to Britain, once you got back to Britain, I think you were going to tell me the story of how you met your wife in Cornwall.
Yes, I was. The only person that I have explained before was alive was actually one of my relatives in this country, was my granny. So I rang her up and said, I'm down here at Penhale. How are you all? And she said, well, I'll tell you something. An old lady down there, Mrs. Fuller, who's the doctor's mother, strange enough, she knew you when you were born in Weybridge. In fact, she put you onto goat's milk when you were not thriving. And to a large extent, you're here today because she did. Go and see her. So I rang her up and she said, oh yes, come along and have tea. Well, she then thought, gosh, I've got this young man. What am I going to do? I can't just have him to tea by myself. So she rang up Mrs. Lee Booker, because she'd heard that her daughter had just been sent back from school, a 17-year-old daughter being sent back from school, in view of the fact that everybody expected parachutes to be landed in the next few weeks. Mrs. Lee Booker had been asked out by one of the commandants of the next outfit on along the coast to tea, and had taken her daughter Julia with her. The commandant had forgotten, and they both returned in very high dudgeon to hear the telephone bell ringing. It was, of course, Mrs. Fuller ringing up Mrs. Lee Booker and saying, would Julia like to come to tea with this young man who just got back from Dunkirk? Now, I reckon that's an extraordinary coincidence. If the commandant had not forgotten, I don't think I would have met my future wife. Anyway, clearly we got on very well together, and it was the start of a 3-year engagement, really, because I was sent abroad very shortly afterwards. And we set sail as a regiment off round the Cape of Good Hope to land at Suez about March, I think it was, 1941. There I discovered that my father, who was a brigadier in the 4th Indian division and responsible for all the basic supplies, which is the AA and QMG job. The 4th in Division had gone off to Eritrea, and he was going off to India to do a job in command the area. He came on board with his red hat and pulled me off ship, much to the amazement, I think, of the rest of the regiment, who had no idea that I had a brigadier as a father. And I had 6 or 7 days with them before they went off to India. When they left, I'd got jippy tummy, and so I got left behind. And when the unit went into the desert, I got left behind and therefore had to catch them up. My first encounter, or near about where they were, was a tank battle. In fact, I'd already got this jippy tummy, and I was already doing what we all do in the desert, squatting down, our trousers down, squatting down, and lo and behold, there was a tank battle all around me, which was quite an eye-opener to the whole performance. I subsequently found my unit and then began 6 or 7 months with what was called in those days
a jock column.
Jock columns, right. They were consisted of a troop, no more than a troop, a battery of field guns, a troop of anti-aircraft guns, a troop of mobile infantry, a company of mobile infantry, and some signalers. And the idea was to make them thoroughly mobile and to harass the opposing forces and then move rapidly. There was no other movement at the time. We were not ready to invade, and the Germans and the Italians were not ready to invade. By this time the Germans had joined the Italians. So this was a sort of no man's land operation, this side of the Loire, for about 3 or 4 months. It had some really pleasant moments. Terribly hot by day, of course, and very cold by night. But when we went into Liga at night, which everybody did, then we would retire to the ambulance, where 5 officers and the commander of this particular column, which was a chap called Garmoyle, Lord Garmoyle,
you were just saying where you would do something at the hospital, at the ambulance.
Yes, I was. I'm going to get his unit. It's terribly important.
Hussar
unit? The rifle brigade. Yeah. The Garmoyle was a rifle brigade commander, and the infantry unit was one of the battalions of the, well, one of the companies of the Rifle Brigade. I want to mention Garmoyle's name and a chap called Turner, I've got to get this right, because Garmoyle was the second in command and Turner was the commander. And what happened was that Turner was very taciturn, and really I didn't think knew anything about it, though he subsequently got a VC. And Garmoyle Ius was the absolutely marvelous interpreter of what went on, and I learnt more about tactics from Garmoil in the ambulance than I'd learned from anybody else. But the great thing about the ambulance was, of course, whiskey. It was the one, we were all given glasses of whiskey when we got into the ambulance that evening, every night. And that was terrific. That's not on tape, is it?
Yes.
It is?
Why not?
All right, okay, that's fine. No, that was the marvellous part about it. I learnt an awful lot there, and subsequently, when we left them, about a long time after that, about 8 or 9 months after that, we'd been through Cilly Rezeg and all the other battles. Garmoil came up to me and said, when you first came to join us, we didn't know what earth to do with you. I'm glad to say, we now could say, we didn't know what we'd have done without you. So that was very nice.
But you were with the first light
attack. I was attached to I was with the first light attack regiment, but we were all parceled out to these various columns and spread out all over the desert, really, as a result of it. We never fought, of course, as a regiment. And subsequently, when we did invade and the Battle of Cilly Rezeg took place, we were still in columns. And in that particular instance, we were not with the second, we were not with the Rifle Brigade. I'm trying to think who we were with actually at the moment.
This is not the 11th Hussars.
The 11th Hussars were there, all right, but the 11th Hussars were always there. The 11th Hussars were not part and parcel of the columns. They were independent and out in front of the everybody most of the time. No, I think I'll just have to think about this for a minute. The 60th Rifles were part of our particular group, and we also had some anti-tank guns belonging to the 4th RHA. And it happened that when we made our big move into the Western Desert, which was an operation, the operation was initially an operation called Crusader. And the idea, first of all, was to take and relieve Tobruk. So we made our way up towards Tobruk and got landed, of course, at an aerodrome just outside Cilly Rezeg, where Rommel and his troops decided to stop us. Rommel actually had been mislaid for once and had gone off in the wrong direction. And instead of coming at us from the west, started to come at us from the east. A friend of mine, I say a friend because he became a friend very quickly. I was at school with his brother, a chap called George Ward Gunn. And I had met up the previous night and established the fact we were both at the same school together, Sedba. And next day, when Rommel attacked from the east, Gunn and I were pushed out on different flanks. I, with my Bofors guns, told to operate his anti-tank guns, and he, of course, with his small two-pounder anti-tank guns. The Germans came at us with about, I would think, 80 to 100 tanks is difficult to say. And the RHA had their own, I think there must have been about 12 field guns at some distance behind us. The infantry really couldn't do much about it in this stage at all. It was a gunner and tank battle. And I was put out on this flank to protect the right flank with my three guns. And along came my own colonel. He was throwing his fly whisk all over the place and saying, "These flies, aren't they hideous?" And I said, "Colonel, sir, they are not flies, they're bullets." "Oh, really?" he said. And I said, "If you don't mind, I'm not going to talk to you standing up." So I lay on my stomach while he stood up in this funny little pickup, flicking what he thought were flies away. They were actually bullets. And he said to me, "Now," he said, "what orders have you got?" And I said, "Well, I've been told that I've got to sort of defend here at the last man, last round." He said, "Oh, yes, well, anyway, that's right. Well, good luck," he said, and turned around and went off. Well, anyway, the battle commenced, and it was clear to me that last man, last round was, well, pretty ridiculous in some ways. So we went on firing for some time, and eventually it was quite clear that one of my guns right in the front had been hit. So I said to my driver, who was firmly in a slit trench, reading a book I'd given him, I said, "Look, Hewish, I'm going up to that gun in front. When I wave a flag, you're to come up, because it's obviously been hit, and we've got to take these men out of the battle." However, I got up, and it had been hit, and they'd actually been doing a hell of a lot of good work firing, and I had actually taken at one point. I jumped into the seat and had a go myself before it was clear that the gun couldn't operate anymore. And I waved my flag, and Hewish, of course, was too intrigued in his book to take any notice. So I had to run back and get our own truck. And I said, "Get out of that slit trench as quick as you jolly well can." And he leapt out. And we drove back to pick up the gunners. And I put one of the worst wounded men, without thinking, of course, into the driver's seat. Whereupon Hewish said to me, "I don't think we'll get very far with him, sir." I pulled him out, and the next minute a shell came straight through, knocking the radio and everybody else and everything for six. And 1 second later, and I wouldn't have been there at all. I would have been also a fatal casualty. Anyway, we drove out, and I got my guns out, two guns which were left, and subsequently met up with the unit eventually. Thinking, in fact, I was going to be court-martialed for ostensibly not fighting the last man and last round. Instead, eventually, they decided I'd done something quite reasonable and gave me a military cross. But really the story I want to say is this, that I subsequently saw George Ward Gunn get his VC. The story has been well told, and I shan't tell it again, but...
Why not?
Well, I can't vouch for the whole story, because everything was moving so fast. But I do know...
If you just say what you saw.
What I saw was a George Ward gun firing this, leaping onto a blazing truck in order to get more ammunition, and firing this gun until literally the whole gun and he was wiped out. Having his other little anti-tank guns, of course, been wiped out too.
How far away were you?
About 500 yards, I suppose, from all this. We were on one flank and I was on the other. And I could see this going on. I didn't know, of course, it was him specifically, until I was told later and the citation came through. His battery commander, who joined him, was the only one that survived that battle, and he was killed next day. And frankly, everybody reckoned that he and George Ward Gunn should have had a VC.
How do you spell Ward Gunn?
W-A-R-D. George Ward Gunn.
Hyphen G-U...
No, it's not. Actually, I've always known him as George Ward Gunn. George is one name, Ward is another Christian name, and Gunn is the surname. Gunn. Subsequently, that next day, when Rommel had then been pushed out of the way, there was an awful lot of fighting all around the area, and nobody quite knew which way anybody was going at all. The Germans were coming from the east, and we were going fighting towards the west and the east at the same time. But I did see Brigadier Campbell getting hold of these little honey tanks, which were pretty useless, very fast, but had no armor on them at all. Banging, I didn't actually see this particular moment, but I saw him with his flags sitting on a sawn-off staff car, directing five tanks at, I suppose, I don't know, 30 or 40 German tanks, with his, luckily had the sun and the sand behind him, as it were, churning up the sand, and these tanks being told to move off in the direction of these others in a way that nobody would have ever managed to galvanize them to go. And the Germans turned round and fled because they thought that they were being attacked by a very, very large formation of tanks. I suppose that Hunnies had blown up an awful lot of sand with the sand and the sun and everything else. But this man sitting on his sawn-off staff car were operating two flags which indicated stop and go was quite astonishing. People who actually saw it in much more detail, of course, have given the better account, but I can vouch for the fact I saw Gunn and Campbell both operating when they won their VCs.
And this is Sidi Rezeg.
Sidi Rezeg, yeah.
November 1941.
Yep.
I'm intrigued by this colonel with his fly whisking away the bullets. Was this man an eccentric, or was it just a pose?
No pose. Just an eccentric. One of the most sort of charming men you could possibly have to meet.
Who was he?
Barney de Robeck. He came from a family, a quite well-known family. I think they were originally Dutch, but both his brother and himself were both gunner colonels. And he managed our regiment in a way that very few people could have done so, because we were so spread out and we were linked to other units. We were protecting all sorts of other units. And he worked his way around all these guns. And we saw him occasionally. But we had a great affection for him. we reckoned that he should have got some decoration. He won an MC in the First World War. And we reckoned he should have been given, I think, something for the way he handled us in the desert.
How do you spell Robeck?
De Robeck, D-E, R, capital R-O-B-E-C-K, De Robeck.
Any other memories of him?
Mainly off duty, I think, and subsequently after the war, when he would come to our regimental reunions. I think everybody was. He subsequently was made a brigadier and sent off to run. I think he was sent off to Persia, actually, in the subsequently, and we missed him a lot. No, I don't think so, and I don't know any more about him.
What was the attitude towards Rommel at that time?
Well, we, for once in our lives, we actually could deal with him, and he had far superior tanks, and that damned 88mm gun that was wreaked havoc, but we beat him. There's no doubt about it, and he had to retreat. And there was one of these retreats back to Benghazi. And during that period, I went off. We got ultimately sent to Derna, to an aerodrome, which was not much fun. Just trying to protect the aerodrome, but it was in midwinter and very cold indeed. And we made our way back when Rommel came back again with us, about, I think it was January 1942, and we had to skedaddle all the way back again. And then this leads us on to the subsequent return, falling back via Elodem, which is an airfield just outside Tobruk, on our way back, and escaping from Elodem airfield in the middle of the night, and with the Germans attacking us, until we ultimately got back to the El Alamein frontier and fought the first battle of Alamein.
Were you in that personally?
Yes, we were there. It wasn't anything more than a token battle, as far as we're concerned, because by this time we got so far back that we were protected by our own air force, and we hardly ever saw a German plane. My father's unit, the 2nd Gurkhas, were in a box outside this front line, and it so happened by sheer chance that I, because of course one of my guns was out there defending this box, and lo, here was Sergeant Major, or